you know, channels of expression, then how can you call it something that people will want to aspire to in the world?
Of course, the way the U.S. pushed, it was like the U.S. that pushed Castro into the embrace of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, and they tried to, you know, to do the same thing to Nicaragua, that East-West thing. I would say the Soviet Union was capitalism's best friend because it was such a terrible example, you know, and that we made certain that any experiments in social change would be just as awful as the Soviet Union was. So there would be no inspiration.
Right. Although you could also say that the embargo was Castro's good friend.
I think that there's a lot of truth in that. I would just say that what the Cold War did, and then the Cold War with Cuba, is galvanize support on each side for the regimes as bad as they were.
Right.
And didn't allow, you know, anything to the left, anything more creative. And we've broken through that now, even though we're in a Trump era.
Right. Castro's foreign policy was pretty good.
This notion of assisting other revolutions where they exist is an important task.
Right. Or just curing them of eye disease.
That was Susie Weissman, Sovietologist, political historian, professor, and host of two radio shows, Beneath the Surface on KPFK and Jacobin Radio Podcast. You're listening to The Katie Halper Show on WBAI 99.5 FM. That's WBAI.org. You can hear The Katie Halper Show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Money.
How much do you think it costs to run a one-hour WBAI program four times a month?
I really have no idea.
Well, what do you think?
Four times a month, maybe $2,000?
So, it actually costs $833 a month, $208 per hour, $833 a month. That's why we need your support. Please go to your smartphone and message 41444 and enter WBAI. Again, on your smartphone, if you can text 41444 and enter WBAI, you can become a WBAI listener sponsor, a WBAI buddy. And thank you.
It's important to bring kids into nature, in the woods, on the water. And on the next episode of Ecologic, will be several people who do that very thing, including Chris Cooper of New York City Audubon Society and Jody Jameson of Hackensack Riverkeeper. Tune in on Tuesday, August 28th at 8 p.m. to hear what they're doing and how they're doing it, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
Problems of our own. Kids are people.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is just about 8 o'clock. Time once again for another edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving. Now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse. But if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bump for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Bump, Billy Bump!
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. Joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Voltaire.
Hey.
And Kyle.
Present.
And you all have brand new microphones, I understand.
We do. They're bright and shiny, and we have to thank our listeners for them.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's good. Thank you very much, listeners, for getting us these microphones. They do sound good. I don't have a new microphone. That you guys do. I'm using the same old one, but...
Now ours are as good as yours, so... I didn't want to say anything, but you've had the nicer one this whole time, and but now we've caught up.
Wow. Okay. Well, I have the oldest one here, so that's and we're getting a new studio built. We're doing all kinds of things here at the radio station, by the way. We're not just sitting around doing nothing. The place is moving forward, and we're going to be covering all kinds of interesting things in future shows, and tonight as well. And hopefully taking phone calls in addition.
We're not raising funds tonight, but you can always contribute to the station.
We could raise funds. I mean, people can always become a BAI buddy. And that's got to give to WBAI.org to get information on that.
Easy to do. All the usual methods. More information, give to WBAI.org.
Or text the letters WBAI to 41444 on your phone. And
follow
and
the link.
Follow, yeah, all the instructions that follow. We're moving forward in many, many ways as things crash down around us. We'll be here to cover it and to provide a running commentary, I suppose. Well, okay, so let's dissemination. Do we have a copy in the studio? No? Oh, that's disappointing. Well, anyway, in there, there's a short entry that has caused plenty of debate and even a fair amount of anger amongst those in the amateur radio scene. And those are people you do not want to anger, believe me. NIST, as I mentioned, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, will discontinue the dissemination of the U.S. time and frequency via the NIST radio stations in Hawaii and Fort Collins, Colorado. These radio stations transmit signals that are used to synchronize consumer electronic products like wall clocks, clock radios, wristwatches, and maybe used in other applications like appliances, cameras, and irrigation controllers. The NIST stations in Hawaii and Colorado are the home of WWV, WWVH, and WWVB. The oldest of these stations is WWV. They've been broadcasting in some form or another since 1920, making it the longest continually operating radio station in the United States. Yet, in order to save approximately $6.3 million, these time and frequency standard stations are potentially on the chopping block. I mean, I know that sounds like a lot of money, but in the broadcasting industry, that really isn't much at all. And I'm surprised somebody just doesn't come by and buy the thing up. So anyway, what does that mean for those who don't live and breathe radio? Well, the loss of WWV and WWVH is probably a non-event for anyone outside of the amateur radio world. In fact, most people probably don't even know they exist. Is that true? No, most people don't know they exist.
Don't know the frequencies exist?
Well, these stations, you know what? Okay, we're going to call one of these stations. WWV is the one in Colorado. I'm going to dial it right now, and you can hear what it sounds like while you guys...
I just wanted to add the interest group of manufacturers and people that use that frequency in products. They alone could form some kind of group to run it as a cooperative or some kind of other org, just because of their interest in producing products that make use of the time coming across like that. I mean, there's plenty of devices and products, and what is it? 6 million is as you said, it's not that much.
I'm calling WWV right now. I can hear what they sound like over the air. It gets better. Okay, that pause there, that's the 30-second mark. By listening to shortwave radio, I know that much.
Interesting.
And, I think the frequencies on shortwave is 5,000 kilohertz, 10,000 kilohertz.
At the tone, 0 hours, 28 minutes, coordinated universal time.
And that's how it goes. minute after minute, hour after hour, forever and ever and ever. Sometimes there are little announcements made. Sometimes there's an extra second inserted, which is very exciting. You know, on New Year's, they do things like that. But that's WWV. And I was giving frequencies, 15,000 kilohertz. And also, I think 2,500, I believe, is the frequency. So this is fascinating, isn't it? And that's the 30-second mark again, by the way, that pause.
Do you know how old that recording is of the guy?
That's a good question. Who's the guy? That's a good question.
Like, he has a type of accent that hasn't been around for like 50 years.
What kind of accent has died out in this country?
The chain smoker, brandy drinking accent from the
50s. At the tone, 0 hours, 29 minutes, coordinated universal time.
You see, now it's quiet. Maybe he'll say something. I think this guy runs the AirTrain. I think I've heard his voice there.
Possibly.
The doors are now closing? You know, that guy.
The doors are now closing.
Wow. So anyway, you can still hear this. But I don't know what the point is of shutting it down. I mean, yeah, you save a certain amount, but this is history. I think it hung up. It hangs up after a while, too. So if you want to call it, I can give you the phone number. It's area code 303. That's in Colorado. 499-7111. And that is how you synchronize. Well, I mean, you don't actually synchronize things yourself unless you're really good at what you do. But devices out there synchronize to either that station or similar stations, such as WWVB, I believe, is the one that's used most often.
Yeah, and you can still get lots of clocks that use this, other devices, clock radios, whatever. If they update over radio technology, this is pretty much what they're using. And I think it would be a loss if this were to be shut down. And I don't know how much money this could actually cost to run.
The article had a great line at the end talking about pirate time stations, which I think would be really funny.
Pirate time stations?
That's a great idea. Oh, yeah.
They just give out the wrong time?
Well, you imagine this becomes defunct or not supported. And
oh, we'd have to start pirate.
Non-functional.
Okay.
You would have pirate time stations. The hurdle, I think, with that would be acquiring an atomic clock to synchronize with, but I'm not sure exactly the details of setting that up on your own.
Well, okay, so they say that WWV and WWVH, that's the one in Hawaii, it's probably not going to be a big deal for most people who don't listen to shortwave radio or amateur radio. Most people, like we've mentioned, probably don't even know they exist, and they're used as frequency standards for calibration purposes, they've been replaced largely by low-cost oscillators. But WWVB is a different story. That station is what is actually used by millions of Americans every day. And by the National Institute of Standards and Technology's own estimates, over 50 million timepieces of one form or another automatically synchronize their time using the digital signal that's been broadcast since 1963, that's at the crux of this whole thing. Many don't believe that NIST is just going to shut down a service that's still actively being used by so many average Americans, but the statement that they gave in this publication is a bit vague. You know, are they going to shut down the entire thing? Are they just going to shut down WWV and WWVH and leave WWVB alone? That's the question that everybody's struggling with.
Yeah, the operational costs are included, and it's sort of like an umbrella funding thing where that you're not necessarily discerning between the different transmitter sites. It's all or nothing, I guess.
I don't know. I'm going to start looking up plans on atomic clocks just in case. I mean, I do have that bunch of beryllium I've been meaning to use for something. And,
it's probably... probably a lot of online auctions and cobbling things together, but it's not impossible.
Pirate time interests me, though. Is it like, the time would be 8:30 at the...
Who knows?
Okay, I've called WWVH in Hawaii, so apparently you can also listen to that station if you call a number there. This is slightly different.
0 hours, 33 minutes, coordinated universal time.
Did I miss the tone? Oh, there it is. Okay. I was wondering where the tone was. It's a lot of build up to that. And I know that lady. I've heard that lady give time recordings in the past.
Yeah, what's interesting to note, though, that our studio clock, our official studio time here, seems to be 7 seconds behind.
Well, this is a perfect opportunity to reset it and to fix these things, because that's what this is for. And if people don't use these services, they disappear. So, Kyle, right,
I'll fix it.
Go ahead.
Yeah, as usual.
And we'll wait for the next minute to come up.
Slow or fast? So I guess I press the, what is it? You said it's slow?
It's 7 seconds slow.
Slow. Fast.
Huh.
At the tone, 0 hours, 34 minutes, Coordinated Universal Time.
All right, that was a cool tone. That was kind of, so that's WWVH, and I can give you that phone number too. That's in Hawaii, 808-335-4363, in case you get a kick out of listening to time stations. And I just discovered there's another one too. Actually, it was shut down. It was called WWVL. I didn't know about that one. It was shut down in 1972. So. Yeah, we used to have more. WWVB is also in Fort Collins, Colorado, and they've been operating, as we mentioned, since 1963. WWVH, the one we're listening to now, since 1948, and the original WWV, 1923. So there's lots of history. Lots of history in the world of radio.
0 hours, 35 minutes, Coordinated Universal Time.
And, of course, Coordinated Universal Time is the same thing, I believe, as Greenwich Mean Time. And if I'm mistaken on that, we'll get a ton of letters.
It all supports my theory that we just had more time in the past.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's been a fun little trip down memory lane into the radio spectrum. But we have other things to talk about as well, including net neutrality, which continues to be an issue even after the FCC made a valiant attempt to destroy it. It still is popping up. You can't kill it. We're going to keep it on until it hangs up. We're going to keep it on.
That's nice.
Get used to it.
So the neutrality stuff you're talking about was a couple different cases, right?
Basically, here's what's happening. Attorneys general. Oh, they hung up. Attorneys general. And that's how you say it, too. You don't say attorney generals. You say attorneys general. If Alex were here, he'd be able to explain why.
Oh, I'm sure.
From 22 states, and that's almost half of them, have filed a motion urging a U.S. appeals court to reinstate the 2015 Open Internet Order, which prohibited Internet service providers from engaging in practices such as blocking, throttling, or paid prioritization. This is part of an ongoing lawsuit initially filed in January following the FCC's vote to repeal net neutrality. I'm happy to say it was led by New York Attorney General Barbara Underwood. They include attorney generals representing states like California, Illinois, Massachusetts, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, District of Columbia, and a bunch of others, too. A free and open internet is critical to New York and to our democracy, said Attorney General Underwood. By repealing net neutrality, the FCC is allowing internet service providers to put their profits before consumers, while controlling what we see, do, and say online. Now, this is something that has also come up in a strange place that you wouldn't expect it to come up, in the middle of a forest fire. The Verizon Wireless is accused of throttling a fire department's data while it was trying to battle a blaze. It's really interesting. The internet has become an essential tool in providing fire and emergency response, particularly for events like large fires, which require the rapid deployment and organization of thousands of personnel and hundreds of fire engines, aircraft, and bulldozers. Santa Clara, California fire paid Verizon for unlimited data, but suffered from heavy throttling until the department paid Verizon more. That's according to their statement and emails between the fire department and Verizon that were submitted as evidence. The throttling affected OES 5262, a fire department vehicle that is deployed to large incidents as a command and control resource and is used to track, organize, and prioritize routing of resources from around the state and country to the sites where they are most needed. OES 5262 also coordinates all local government resources deployed to the Mendocino Complex fire, which is an ongoing wildfire that is the largest in California's history. So you have sort of the meeting of climate change and the killing of net neutrality. It's like a Trump grand slam there. The vehicle has a device that uses a Verizon SIM card for internet access. Now, according to the statement, in the midst of our response to the Mendocino Complex fire, County Fire discovered the data connection for OES 5262 was being throttled by Verizon, and data rates had been reduced to 1/200th or less than the previous speeds. 1/200th, that's 0.05%, I believe, or 0.5%. These reduced speeds severely interfered with the OES 5262's ability to function effectively. The information technology staff communicated directly with Verizon via email about the throttling, requesting it be immediately lifted for public safety purposes. But Verizon did not immediately restore full speeds to the device. Verizon representatives confirmed the throttling, but rather than restoring us to an essential data transfer speed, they indicated that County Fire would have to switch to a new data plan at more than twice the cost, and they would only remove throttling after we contacted the department that handles billing and switched to the new data plan. Now, Verizon, in a statement, said, "We made a mistake in how we communicated with our customer about the terms of its plan. Like all customers, fire departments choose service plans that are best for them. This customer purchased a government contract plan for a high-speed wireless data allotment at a set monthly cost. Under this plan, users get an unlimited amount of data, but speeds are reduced when they exceed their allotment until the next billing cycle." Okay, I don't know what I just said there, but basically I said it's unlimited until you reach the limit. The Santa Clara Fire Department just today, in fact, I believe responded to Verizon's claim that the throttling was just a customer service error and has nothing to do with net neutrality. To the contrary, they said Verizon's throttling has everything to do with net neutrality. It's just amazing to see fire departments on the side of net neutrality. I mean, that is how this fight is being fought.
Yeah, and now we're watching Verizon basically profiteer off a situation in which lives literally are at stake, and it's pretty disgusting. I mean, we've got a tradition of service providers having to provide like emergency service and 911 and things like that, but they like money, and I guess it doesn't matter that there's a damn fire going on.
Yeah, to Rob's point, part of the reason why, as we discussed in the show a lot, that Verizon and all these companies are so eager to get rid of copper lines, not because copper lines are necessarily worse, it's because they're more heavy regulation than fiber and other technologies. So it's not that they want to get to a less regulated market so they can rip people off more.
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning that Verizon actually works with the Forest Service a lot. I've been on wildfires as a journalist and covered this stuff and had experience. I've seen really how well they do set up infrastructure. One of the aspects of that is wherever the incident command system is, Verizon is there, or whomever, usually Verizon in the areas I was in, setting up landlines, like usually at a school or whatever. But they'll add lines very, very quickly so that the incident command can control the situation and handle billing and everything for all the subcontractors, whether that's, water or lavatories, everything, everything you would need to create a small city. This fire is huge. So what you have is a lot of other resources, as they would say, and assets being moved in. And it sounds like this command and control vehicle, though nice and new and flashy and can do all this stuff from the comfort of whatever kind of big vehicle it is, they equipped it with a commercial plan, or they procured it as a government plan, but they weren't so careful as to budget or create a backup plan. Were they to exceed that in the plan that they ordered. So it's kind of like the thing where they're experiencing what the average consumer gets now. But in their case, they had a peak in traffic which is practical for the type of vehicle it is, being on the scene, having a massive amount of teams and people coordinating just for their small part of fighting this fire, it puts an enormous strain on this resource. So they procured a plan through the government procedures, but it was a plan that any other consumer would have. But then they supported a huge team, you know, with this one plan that any ordinary consumer with a data plan wouldn't even broach. You know, they wouldn't get close to that ordinarily. But it seems like they've supplied the hardware with only one SIM and a SIM of the type that is associated with this plan. And this is the, you know, it's not unusual. It's totally fair for a fire department to go for the sort of best practical thing to supply wireless for even a command vehicle like this. And it's very surprising to me that Verizon, for all of their participation in the incident command system that the Forest Service uses, did not respond through their wireless arm. And this is, again, where the older landline service and other services that these telephone companies provide perhaps have, I think, a little bit more a sense of duty as a public utility, whereas the wireless companies are really just a company and obstinate even when a first responder is in need.
By the way, our phone number is 347-335-0818 if you'd like to join the conversation on this or any of the other topics that we've discussed. But my question here concerning this, I know the term throttling has been used before. Net neutrality was attacked by the FCC and crippled. Could this be something? Could Verizon be right here in saying that they just had the wrong data plan?
I don't think so, because I think their data plans are misleading. I mean, from a consumer perspective, we've run into the same thing traveling and using various unlimited plans from a variety of carriers. And I don't think it's necessarily unique to them, but there might be other thoughts on this.
But even if they did have the wrong data plan for their situation, there should have been some switch that Verizon could flip to say, okay, this is a major disaster going on, and maybe we should let them have their data for now, and we'll figure out the billing later.
But is that a net neutrality issue, or is that just a competence issue?
It's not net neutrality, technically.
It's what?
It's not net neutrality, because net neutrality is about what is about treating the websites that you browse differently, whereas this is about bandwidth. So basically, literally any website that they visited would be throttled.
Yeah, they would have all been equally throttled or limited in this way. Not that any one site would come faster versus another, like retail stores versus their interagency management systems.
We're saying the fire department's wrong here. That is really not an issue.
We're saying they're right, but it's not because of net neutrality. It's because of
net neutrality. They're wrong.
On that point, they're wrong. But on the wider issue, they're obviously in the right.
Oh, obviously, yeah. They should have gotten more bandwidth clearly. But you know, we have to get our terms right. If this isn't a net neutrality issue, it's interesting that people are thinking along those lines, and I think that's good. People are realizing that this is what the loss of net neutrality will bring us are crippled routes to sites we need to get to. But in this particular case, it might not be completely accurate.
Yeah, exactly. The problem is that Verizon is not sufficiently regulated, where they're able to sell a manipulative, quote-unquote, unlimited package, which is, in fact, limited.
Yeah, I think by virtue of net neutrality giving them the right to tier and package their plans as they do, it is an unintended consequence of the legislation that allowed these companies the breadth and power to change the structure of how they deliver service. Now, the packets themselves exactly for these firefighters, I think that's more of how come their plan was not associated in a incident or emergency classification? Some way, like if a police station lost service for some reason, they would probably be expedited in getting that repaired, or other, like a hospital, if they lost power, those guys would be out there probably trying to scratch their heads and fix the power pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And in this case, Verizon just was flat-footed in their response.
It seems like they just ran into customer service at Verizon, which everybody else has to deal with, so now we got a good taste of what that's all about.
Well, we know all about this.
Uh-huh. Yes, Walter.
Customer service and manipulative marketing. I don't think that only emergency responders should have the privilege of not getting a poorly worded advertisement with thinking they're getting unlimited.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, they should jump to the front of the line. They're emergency responders, after all.
That meant everybody else.
No, this is, again, this is the effect. The consumer being at the effect, and here we're hearing it from first responders who probably, in this situation, have more of a right. But no, we ought not to say, these types or classes of people are more valued as that is the definition of the net neutrality laws, but in more of a organizational mode.
So you could even say that the emergency responders are opting for something that is anti-net neutrality by wanting preferential treatment. That's interesting perspective.
A little, and it's like, their procurement resources. You'd think they would have more options as an emergency responder to procure this. But again, it's a small department, and they're working on a big, massive event. It may have been for, bringing this command and control truck around to events and festivals. Maybe that's enough data and it worked. But for a massive event, an incident like this, where you're hosting many people for a really long duration, it really wasn't the plan. And at worst, they could have swapped the SIM quickly. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, buy a prepaid SIM as a backup, put it in a little baggie.
All kinds of options. You just got to ask the hackers. Our phone number again, 347-335-0818. I still don't think we have all the phone lines installed, so you might be going to a phone line that's not showing up on our board. I don't know yet, but 347-335-0818. We are working on getting that installed along with the new studio that we're slowly putting together.
Yeah, we saw incredible bits and pieces of it, framing. There's tools around. Stuff's happening here at WBAI.
Absolutely.
So be excited and... these microphones, it's really jarring for me. Every time I open my mouth, I can hear sound. It's almost too loud. In fact, I have to take my headphones off step back.
Yeah.
I think it's getting even louder now.
You just step out in the hallway if you want. I can guarantee you'll be hearing sounds of construction over the air because we don't have soundproofing in this room. But when we move into the new studio, you won't hear anything. Well, you hear us, but you won't hear anything outside. Rob.
I just wanted to add to the net neutrality story that we were talking about with the various states' attorneys general filing these briefs. I wanted to find a source to find out which states they were, and I found a list. So I know we have listeners all over the place. So if your state is on this list, thank your attorney general. And if your state isn't, contact your attorney general.
I named
ask
a few
why.
Of them, but I didn't name all of them. So
well, here's
so
all
go
of them,
ahead,
really
go
quick.
Ahead. Unless, okay, wait. Do we want to guess what they are? I mean, we know New York is one.
Okay, yeah.
I'm gonna say, even though I just read the list or part of the list, I kind of forget. I'm gonna say California.
Correct.
We have 22 of them, so we have 20 left. Kyle, you want to give a guess?
Oh wow, I looked at it briefly.
What
I know
state are you from?
I know Illinois is on there.
What state are you from?
Yes,
I know Washington's
Washington.
On there.
So there you go. You got one. Voltaire.
American Samoa.
Okay, that's not a state, and you don't get to guess again.
Hawaii.
Wow. Is Hawaii on there?
Hawaii
all
is
right,
on there.
All right, good for
yes.
Hawaii. Wow. Yeah. Before they're destroyed by a hurricane. That's, no, just kidding. You'll be fine.
Oof.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just shoot this list off really quick.
Let me keep going until I get one wrong.
Oh, okay.
Illinois.
Okay. I said Illinois.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Illinois
I didn't hear
is
you.
On there. Yes.
All right, New Jersey.
New Jersey is on there.
Okay, wow. Now it gets challenging because what are the other cool? Colorado. They're a cool state.
Colorado is not on there.
Boo.
Wow. You let me down, Colorado. No, you legalized pot. I thought you'd appreciate net neutrality, but apparently not.
No, they have big telecommunications headquartered there.
All right, let's hear the rest of them, and we'll take this phone call that we have here.
Okay.
We'll get to this call in just a moment. Go ahead.
So really quickly, California, Connecticut, Delaware, District of Columbia, Hawaii, Illinois, Iowa, Kentucky, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Mississippi, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, and Washington.
How is Kentucky on there and not Colorado?
You'll have to ask the Attorney General of Colorado.
Isn't Level 3 headquartered in Colorado?
It's a
Quest
good thing.
Is there, too. They got telecommunications interests.
Uh-huh.
They're going to keep the internet quiet.
Interesting. Okay, let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Kat from New Jersey.
How you doing?
It was a great hope. Thank you very much.
Oh, good. You were at the conference.
Yeah, I couldn't make it.
Then you weren't at the conference.
Attending everyone from the beginning, but I was in Minnesota.
I see.
My one question, when will you be able to download the audio files?
Well, the audio files, we are still working on. There's a lot of cleaning up that needs to be done, and plus we're in the middle of putting out an issue, so that kind of is getting in the way. But the plan is to have the audio available on our website. Then on the store, we'll have flash drives and DVDs and downloadable video at that point. And then down the road, we put the whole thing up on YouTube. Everything just takes a lot of time to get into the right format.
Yeah, it's really important.
At least if you can get the audio, you know, attached to the talks.
Yeah, we hope we can do that in the next week or so.
I can just shed some light. The audio is derived from the video that we get, and we want to go through and verify everything. And if there's any gaps or anything that needs to be repaired, we'll do that. And then we pull the audio from those repairs. So otherwise, there'd be gaps. There'd be inconsistencies. We want the audio to match exactly what we curate from the event. But the good news is we have all of it, and we're going through it rapidly as quickly as we can.
Yeah, thanks to our friends at the Internet Society for making all that possible. But
talk about GPS secrets of the show.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
Yeah, thanks. Great show. Bye.
Thank you. Take care. Go ahead, Walter.
For our listeners that are technically minded, the Internet Society is, of New York page on live stream already has the videos posted, so you can use a tool like YouTube-DL to download that and extract the audio.
Okay. It won't be clean though. We're trying to make it as professional as possible, and like Kyle said, there's a lot of repair work that needs to be done. We're working on it, as hard as we possibly can. We're also working on getting premiums out to people that have asked for them. I know we fell behind a bit on that. Some have gone out, others are being worked on. A lot of catching up to do that we're doing in all different forums. Once again, phone number 347-335-0818. We only have a couple of minutes left. I would like to give some more time to a listener, whether it's an over-the-air listener or an online listener. The same phone number works, 347-335-0818.
And I'd also like to encourage our Australian listeners, which I know we have some, to either get in touch if you can't call in now, email us at oth@2600.com and let us know your perspective on the issues we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, the problem is if you're listening far away, it takes time for the stream to get. It's usually like a minute or two. So, you might hear us say, oh, we got no phone calls, and then you're calling in, and, there's a delay. But we do have a phone call now, so hopefully we're on the same time here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi, this is Jerry from NIAC.
How you doing, Jerry from NIAC?
Yeah, I'm talking about WWV.
Yes.
They operate on 2.5, 5, 10, 15, and 20 megahertz.
That's correct. I said kilohertz before, but I add 1,000 to that. But they're all still operational.
They're going online.
I'm sorry?
I heard they were going online instead of like over the air.
Well, that was basically the story that we read, is that they're going to be discontinuing at least WWV and WWVH and maybe WWVB, which is the one that coordinates all the clocks. But everything else, I guess, yeah, it'll be online. But I'm not sure if that really serves much purpose, because, you know, your internet connection could be delayed, so it wouldn't be accurate.
Right. Even over the radio, like with just now with you. Because you were over the phone, right?
Yeah, right. And I hope nobody calibrated their clocks or anything vital because of that, because it could have been delayed. It's not accurate. It's a rebroadcast. It's not official.
Yeah. You want to call yourself to calibrate anything using those tones. I think over the network, I think what you mean by that is that a lot of the function is being supplanted by devices that are connected to a network, because there are time protocols and so on over IP. And that sort of replaced the function.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they're broadcasting, although they may, NIST may be technically the same group that does a lot of the internet time protocols.
And by the way, if you do call it, and if you go through a satellite, it's going to be off as well because of the delay there. So that's something else to keep in mind. So really the only way over the radio is really the only way to know that you're getting it at the right synchronized time.
Right. It just seems that they want to digitize everything and totally destroy anything analog.
Yeah, you know, like I'm all for digitization. It's great for archiving things. We do it all the time, but you never get rid of the analog. You always hold on to other things as well, have multiple formats. That's very, very important. But listen, thanks for your call. Thanks for listening. Write to us, oth@2600.com. That's our email address. And stay tuned to WBAI. And we will be back next Wednesday night. Until then, have a good night.
Greetings, this is Savion Glover, and you're listening to WBAI in New York. Enjoy.
August the 22nd, 2018. Do you know who has your personal data? Let me ask the question differently. Do you know who's using your personal data? Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key, my colleague is Joe King, and podcast of the program is available on wbai.org/archive, also on prn.fm, and on our website, pcradioshow.org. We are on WBAI-FM, 99.5 on the radio, and prn.fm on the internet each Wednesday with essentially the same program except when WBAI is in a membership drive. A long-promised integration between the Amazon Alexa voice assistant and Microsoft's Cortana has finally come to life after a year of waiting. To use it, just ask Alexa to open Cortana. Or if you're on Windows 10 PC, ask Cortana to open Alexa. Cortana has integration with Microsoft Outlook for email and calendaring that Alexa and other similar systems don't. If you own an Amazon Echo speaker, you can now finally speak to Microsoft's Cortana assistant, if you so choose. Also, at long last, you can now use Cortana on Windows 10 PC to talk to Amazon's Alexa assistant. The intermingling of intelligent assistants come almost a year after it was promised. Last August, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos and Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella announced that companies were teaming up to integrate Alexa and Cortana. In January, Microsoft told reporters that the Alexa integrations were in its final stages of testing, and that was pretty much the only public update from either company about the partnership since the initial announcement. Until now. If you're talking to Amazon's assistant from any Alexa-powered device, you can now just say, Alexa, open Cortana. From there, you can access a handful of features that are exclusive to Microsoft Assistant. For example, you can have it read to you emails sent to your corporate account or list your upcoming appointments that were scheduled in Microsoft Outlook. Similarly, from Windows 10 computer, you can now say open Alexa after you launch Cortana. You can then ask Amazon's assistant to do anything it could do on the Echo speaker, including purchase items from Amazon, play songs from Amazon Music, or play games such as Jeopardy. The companies are cautioning users that this is a public preview of the integration of the assistants, and it's not a fully baked release yet. By the way, I've been testing it. It does work. On its surface, the partnership between the two companies would seem an unlikely one. Not only do Alexa and Cortana ostensibly compete with each other, but Amazon Web Services and Microsoft Azure, the two companies' cloud computing services, are arch rivals. However, the partnership is a strategic move for both companies. Amazon, which failed to establish its own devices or operating system as significant players in the smartphone market, has been aggressively pushing its intelligent assistant, seeing voice as the next major computing platform. The endeavor has been dubbed Alexa Everywhere. Every speaker, appliance, and now PC that you can use to talk to Alexa can serve as a channel to the wide world of Amazon's goods and services. By most measure, Alexa is a leading voice assistant, with about one out of every four home now has an Alexa unit, edging out the Google Assistant. The deal with Microsoft gives Amazon another beachhead in its attempt to dominate the market. Earlier this year, in a related move, Amazon announced partnerships with HP, Acer, Asus for special Alexa-equipped PCs. For Microsoft, the deal gives it a chance to promote Cortana to a new audience. The company has long hyped Cortana's integration with Outlook and its other corporate tools in an attempt to lure its users. But in terms of catching on with consumers on electronic makers, Cortana has trailed far behind Alexa and Google Assistant. Only one smart speaker on the market supports Cortana. Microsoft Assistant integrates with far fewer smart home appliances than its rivals, and there are far fewer Cortana-specific apps. By bringing Cortana to Alexa, Microsoft can potentially reach users on devices other than PCs. But it's an open question whether Alexa users will actually take advantage of that option. I could see its use. I will report on it in a future report if I can find this useful at all. On the internet, companies like Google and Facebook get their revenue from the number of subscribers that visit websites, such as Facebook, in terms of how many subscribers they have in their database. Or in the case of Google, how many clicks there are when people are viewing advertising pages, or the number of pages that are viewed, or even the dwell time on how long they spend watching or reading a particular page on the internet. The crux of all this is that the statistical information is provided by people like Google and Facebook, and the accuracy of it is taken as face value as being accurate. Is it? Facebook brags it has a massive real audience, estimated to be about 2.23 billion monthly users and 1.47 billion daily users, and this is after they have deleted 1.27 billion fake accounts. The inference in all that is that now that all these fake accounts are out, the other numbers of 2.23 billion monthly and 1.47 billion daily, those are real accounts. However, the social networking giant's math is being challenged now in a lawsuit that claims that this potential reach is exaggerated, thereby defrauding advertisers. In other words, it is alleged that the information is not quite as many eyeballs are seeing Facebook ads. Potential reach is an estimation of how many people are in an ad set's target audience. This estimation is a unique calculation by Facebook and isn't intended to align with third-party calculations or population census data. In a complaint filed this past week in a U.S. District Court in Oakland, California, the plaintiff company, Project Therapy, claims that the potential reach and estimated daily reach figures that Facebook provides to advertisers are wildly inflated. And they give examples of this. The complaint claims that Facebook purported potential reach among 18 to 34-year-olds in each U.S. state is greater than the actual population of 18 to 34-year-olds in each of those states. By the way, the 18 to 34 are the millennials. Based on publicly available information and research done by the plaintiff, and their own analysis is that among the 18 to 34-year-olds in Chicago, for example, Facebook asserted its potential reach was approximately four times, in other words, 400% higher than the actual number of real people age 18 to 34-year-old. And with Facebook accounts in Chicago, well, that's a big, huge distortion in number. And in Kansas City, the complaint asserts the number provided by Facebook was 200% or two times higher than the actual number of people with Facebook accounts in the area. Well, it sounds like it's inflated. And what's more, the court filing contends that former Facebook employees described as confidential witnesses have acknowledged that Facebook is, well, they're using inflated numbers. The complaint states, a former Facebook employee who worked in the infrastructure mapping team stated that those who were responsible for ensuring the accuracy of the potential reach at Facebook were indifferent to the actual numbers, and in fact, they didn't really care what numbers they had. This unidentified individual allegedly also said the potential reach statistic is like, well, it's made up PR number. A second former Facebook employee is said to have observed that Facebook does not care about the accuracy of information related to the number of users so long as advertising revenue is not negatively affected. And a third former employee described as saying that Facebook isn't interested in keeping fake accounts out of the potential reach calculations. The attorneys representing Project Therapy are seeking class action certification in order to represent by other affected Facebook advertisers. The attorneys representing Project Therapy is reported to have spent over $14,000 on Facebook ads, and they are seeking class action certification in order to represent other affected Facebook advertisers. Facebook, however, dismissed the allegations in an email and said that this suit is without merit and we plan to defend ourselves vigorously, said the VP and Deputy General Counsel at Facebook. If Facebook loses in this, are they going to have to make adjustments and return a lot of the revenue dollars they receive based on false advertising numbers? Facebook has a credibility gap, tremendous credibility gap.
Hank, are you sure about that, about Facebook lying, not telling the truth about how many members? Oh, come on. I don't believe that for 1 minute. Facebook, the people who arranged for Russian spies to fix the last election, Facebook, the people who don't know when they even have a phony account, Facebook, no, they would never lie. Oh, come on.
The following computer news headline was reported by 10 different sources, and the headline all were the same. Firefox add-on with 220,000 plus installs caught collecting users' browsing history. And it went on to say that Mozilla has removed web security from its add-ons portal along with 22 other add-ons. A popular Firefox add-on is secretly logging users' browsing history, according to the reports. The add-on in question is named Web Security and is currently installed by 220,746 Firefox users, according to the official Mozilla add-on portal. The add-on's description claims Web Security actively protects you from malware, tampered websites, or phishing sites that aim to steal your personal data.